Thank you very much, honourable members. indicate your readiness to questions to the candidate.
Okay, I can go.
Okay, honorable Sandra.
Right. Thank you very much, Dr. Kutrikova, for being here. I've had a look at your CV, and you immensely qualified and have the experience required with the FNC board. But like with all candidates, we want to make sure that you appoint the right people. So we look back into your career history, and if there are any red flags, we raise them. So I want to take you back 10 years and regarding the listing of Vodacom on the JSE, which according to reports, you were exerted, you received pressure from COSATU to prevent the listing. The listing, the failure of the listing resulted in the rand weakening and caused embarrassment to South Africa. So I just want to know from your side, what happened? Please try to be brief, only in 5 minutes or 15, I've got another question. So did you, were you pressured by COSATU? And if you were, why did you feel the need to, despite knowing your mandate and what you're supposed to do, respond to COSATU pressure instead of doing what's right?
Certainly, I was not pushed by COSATU. It was for me, it was a lingering principle intervention from the authority should have exacted. We received a legal opinion, and the legal opinion was incomplete on whether Telkom can surrender its shares to Vodafone, given our very strict foreign controls regulations, without public interest process. For me, that was a lingering, painful process. So the first legal opinion said it wasn't necessary. That shocked me. Then, of course, it was clear the public interest was acute when COSATU decided to interdict the process. And as we counsel, our then chairperson had gone to the city. We met as counsel when we agreed that the right thing to do is inspect, attest the assertion of COSATU in the legal proceedings. We also presented our own papers. You know, for me, it's not a question of national of international embarrassment. For me, it's national imperative. Would any entity sell the jewels without a public process? And in that case, Telkom. In fact, I was later being dictated by the chief strategist of Telkom, Mr. Altman, who went public and said perhaps that was a rash and perhaps it was a mistake on behalf of Telkom then. So I am proud to say that my conscience prevailed, and I was very glad that there were others who were willing to take the transaction.
Yeah. Thank you. Now we've heard your side of the story. Yeah. Okay, now in your current profession at UNISA, great. So I received a letter from the union, the Academic and Professional Association of South Africa, which contains some very, very alarming and serious allegations, which I believe need to be investigated. One of them is that you allegedly said that you have a mandate to get rid of colours and idioms. Another allegation is that you have basically carte blanche in making appointments, and that the former Minister of Higher Education, Mr. Blaine Nzimande's son, Bulelo Nzimande, was a president in 2016 without Bayou, without the following of proper HR processes, no adverse, no interview. So these are two very serious allegations against you. And if we are going to appoint people to the SABC board, we need to know that it's people who will not not follow the letter of the law, especially with appointments, which is a serious problem with SABC. I think the whole country actually is recovering from shouting the name when you get to the SABC. This is affects the SABC. It affected the whole country. So I'd just like your take on what's contained in this letter from the union. And I believe actually, on your side, if you think that not true, that they need to be tested, whether it's by court of law or by disciplinary inquiry. But to me, as I have in my family, it's mostly concerning and a major red flag for me if you are to serve on the SABC board.
No, thank you. The allegations are quite serious, but they are being investigated, and I'll wait for that outcome. But I just want to put on record, those allegations suddenly surfaced when I found extensive irregular expenditure in my unit. And I was not going to keep quiet. I then proceeded to call the internal audit to investigate, and that's when those allegations surfaced. And I'll leave it there. I'll wait the outcome, as you'd appreciate. One has to align ourselves with the legal processes underway in UNISA, and that's what I will do for now. But I want to put it on record that the timing of it came when four individuals could not explain transactions very extensively. Transactions running a million in a particular unit. On the appointment of Mr. Minister Blaytran, I was in a unit where there was no person with finance expertise. There was no accountant. So we got a CA who joined us, a lady, and because of the market and the need for women, she was there for a month. She left. Then we got another person, this time a gentleman, he came on board for a month and left. In the meantime, the audit qualifications were not disappearing. I was not about to risk another qualification. Minister Blaydeson happened to be working for EY, who was at the time doing our audit control. He demonstrated extensive knowledge of the print environment. Put him on contract. He hasn't been appointed permanently, so he's a fixed term contract. And I don't see anything irregular in that. In fact, the one of the people who are accusing me of being irregular was instrumental in confirming that fixed term contract.
Okay, so just to clarify, one, obviously you are at work in a higher education institution, and at the time, Mr. Blaydeson and Mandela was the Minister of Higher Education. So already that is just problematic. All you need to answer to me is, was the position advertised? Was there an interview process? Or was it just brought in, as you say?
That was not working. He was working for EY. EY was doing our auditors. We then asked him to assist us, and we gave him a fixed term contract. We are yet to appoint a full-time position for that particular job.
So on what basis is he working for you? Was he seconded? Who's paying him? Is it the company paying him, or is it the university paying him?
The university is paying on the basis of fixed term contract.
Okay, so he works for the university. So he was given a position at the university. he wasn't seconded from the company who was doing the audit. Because then that would make sense if he was working for the company who was doing the audit, and you said, can you let us have your staff member to assist with audits? He's an employee. If he's receiving salary from UNISA, it means he's an employee of UNISA. And if there wasn't a process of appointment as is required, that means it was irregular. If that's what you're saying, he's paid by UNISA, there was no process, he just happened to work for the company that was doing the auditing, and then you brought him on board. To me, that sounds regular. The position wasn't advertised. There wasn't an interview process. He was a son of the minister who is responsible for the sector you work in. So I mean, just that information in front of, if you put it in front of anyone, they'd say this is highly irregular. Don't you agree?
It would have been a regular letter of conduct by EY. If EY was doing our audit, that would have been a regular letter of conduct. So he had to release that position, and then he then had to assume a six-term contract position to complete the task at hand, which was to help us clear a whole lot of audit trail.
How did he get his six-term contract? Did you say, come, here's a contract sign? Or was the position advertised? And then he applied and was interviewed. That's all I'm interested in. I'm not interested in the work that she did. I'm interested in how he got the job. Just those details. If you can just focus on that, my time is running out. I just want to know, how did he come to get that contract?
Firstly, he didn't get it through me. There was an executive director beneath me who appointed him. And given the need of an account of us having failed 3 times to get someone, it was absolutely critical that we had the skill set that was willing to help us at short notice. So it wasn't me that appointed him, the executive director who reported to me. And the process, so the due process for fixed term contracts, you need not advertise it.
Maybe not answering my question, I'm getting frustrated. You just need to be frank and honest. You can't say being the person beneath you, the buck stops with you as the person in charge of a department, so you can't blame a subordinate. Again, I'm asking the question, was it a process, or was it just brought in and given a contract to sign? I'm asking if it was advertised, or was it just taken from his, wherever he was working, brought into UNISA, given a contract by the subordinate, the buck stops with you, by the way, and signed the contract. That's all I need to know. And please, just be factual. Don't, if you try and do that, it just only causes more confusion and makes it seem like you're trying to hide something. So just be fully honest. I'm helping you to help yourself.
Honorable Funda, all of the panel members are getting restless. The people here, they say that has taken more than 10 minutes.
I'm sorry, okay. I just want to answer and then I'm done.
Yeah, so maybe the challenge Dr. Soto was is that a question has been put. So Honorable Funda keeps on going back to it because she's not getting the answer she wanted. So help us by responding in a pointed way. Her time is over now.
See, if you don't respond, there's no time. Chair.
I'll just reiterate what I said. a minister Blade's son, but not appointed on the basis of the fact that you have the minister's son. In fact, I didn't even know at that time that you have the minister's son. I didn't know. So I want to put it on record that he was not appointed with the minister's son. He was an expert in EY, in auditing, the print production. No one else could have done it in the short term. All the preceding applicants could not do the work. They were taken by the market. We were absolutely desperate. Yes, we didn't advertise them, but we didn't have to. We'll fix some contract.
Thank you very much, honorable member.
No, thanks, Chair. Welcome, Doctor. I think mine, I would give you a list of questions to respond later, because I think it's important to hear you talking to us. And thank you for showing confidence in applying for this post. In your CV, I see that you were a guest lecturer at the Catholic University in Brussels. Maybe I would like to hear more maybe during that, because I just want to understand. And then, as we are currently, there was a matter with the SABC around issue of employees maybe wanting to be fired or so, but there had to be an intervention, actually provision of leadership by the minister to come in and provide leadership. What will be your understanding on the role of the minister vis-à-vis the board on the matter, because the issue was affecting the SABC thinking. I think that will be my questions. Otherwise, I'm okay with your CV. In my view, I could see in it you do qualify. However, thanks.
Thank you. With regards to the Brussels Catholic University, we at UNISA have an exchange of international universities. So I had been teaching telecoms and broadcasting, and they were interested in hearing the perspective of the South African market, which I then presented at the university. So that's how I got there. And I did that, I think, for over two or three days. It was an invaluable experience. So it was part of an international exchange. The lecturers there would also come to South Africa and share experiences with the media environment, specifically in our department. And then around the, am I getting on you that you're talking about a retrenchment exercise, the recent retrenchment?
Yeah, but also provision of leadership, relationship, minister and SABC board, you understand me?
I'm understanding that the minister has some oversight over stability and in SABC. One. Two, that she would be the mediator between Treasury and SABC on the budget. So insofar as how the budget is used, she would need to be accountable to some extent. I certainly believe that. I'm not sure what role was played. I've only seen what has played out in the media. But from where I'm sitting, and having looked at the annual report of the SABC, and having studied what happened in the BBC, I studied in the UK. There's a particular technique that must be applied when considering the skill set in the broadcasting environment. In fact, any environment, but specifically the broadcasting, or even to make the telecoms. We just use an example of what happened in Telkom, South Africa. So they identified what needs to be done in terms of the strategy and looked at the alignment of skill sets required and looked at performance tied to the strategy. They then monitored that performance. And year on year, they were then able to identify which skill sets are required in-house and what they can outsource. The BBC did the same. Incrementally over time, they identified, in fact, in the BBC, they started with the top management post. Looked at the top management post, looked at the span of control there, had a view of it, what was required, and that they did with the engagement with staff. And then the surplus staff they were able to use for the expansion of BBC. So there was no real retrenchment. So I don't know what has happened inside the SABC. I've only seen the media clippings. But at first I would say if SABC is really moving towards advancing DVT and moving to OTT, certainly it means that the scope, the expansion of business would mean that you'd have to redeploy staff into other business units, into your expansion, and you'd have to reskill them. So I don't know what motivated the board, I've looked at the turnaround strategy, but from where I'm sitting, that would be my first set of questions. Furthermore, I would ask that given the performance of SABC 3, and given the SABC's constant articulation for additional channels from DTT, how is it going to then populate the additional skill set if it was then going to let go of the in-house skills? So those are the questions. They're not clear to me because I don't really know the details. But those are the questions I would ask.
Thank you very much. Another question.
Good afternoon, Doctor. I see you were with the CASA between 2006 and 2015. I need your experience there in terms of the compliance on the SABC to the CASA regulations during that period. Help me share your experience with the panel. Let me continue. I have quite a number of questions that I'm going to be raising as I go. I would as well appreciate it and just take us through the three auditor generals for each of three financial years. Auditor General's audit opinion of the SABC and the matters of emphasis during the period for the SABC. What is it that the SABC has been saying in the last 3 years, and what are those matters of emphasis that have been coming up from time to time? Maybe very briefly, you can as well try and assist the panel as to how best can you attend to those issues. The second last one is the role of the executive directors in the board. Do you subscribe to a nation which says we might have to review that particular role or not? The role of the executive directors in the board. I see you are with Eunice, and now I'm as well tempted to ask a question of the role of tertiary institutions in assisting the SABC to execute its educational mandate. If I just talk to that one as well. The very last one is the issue of community radios. What role are they getting the necessary support in your understanding from government, the NPDC, MPDA, or any other person is supposed to give them? Yeah, those are the issues. But I will appreciate if they just talk to them very quickly and straight to the point.
All right, let me start with the issue of the executive directors. Where I am at UNISA, I can't imagine how the board would function if they didn't get the advisory function of the executive director. So I'm one of them. I think they have a role to play insofar as they give advice to the board when the board makes decisions. Not a voting role per se, but they do need to sit and advise. I can't imagine how any board would function if, and I'm assuming they are talking about the CFO, the CEO, and the COO.
Exactly.
Yeah. I can't imagine how the board would make decisions if they were not able to be present when these discussions are made. They compile the report, the board discusses the report, the board members may need, the non-executive directors may need, have questions of clarity, and the accountable officers must be able to respond to them on the spot.
That's right. Let's put it to the other issue.
Then on the issue of the community ratings and the support, no, I think the community ratings are on the periphery of the broadcasting sector.
In your understanding, are they getting that necessary support?
They could get more support from the NDTA. They could get more support. And what do I mean? I know the community radios are struggling with funding, as much as the FNBC is struggling with funding. So we have to find a model of how we support them. I know in terms of when I was in Qatar and we were licensing them, the perennial question was, how are you going to fund this service? And you've got to pay distribution fees. How are you going to do that? Signal distribution, how are you going to do that? And how are you going to be sustainable? And how are you going to retain your MSM, your audience? What studies have you done in order to understand their content needs? And all of those questions. But the entire framework or regulatory framework for community broadcasters perhaps needs improvement.
Not that let us proceed.
The last one is the audit opinion. So the issue of controls in the FABC, unclear the Senate operating procedure.
I thought you just refresh our minds. What was the Auditor General saying about the operation, the financial position of the SABC in the last 3 years as a starting point before you go to the matters of MSC?
Okay. The Auditor General has been concerned about SABC's sustainability and excessive fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And from where I'm sitting, there were numerous. In fact, when I was at ICASA, they had already started raising some of these concerns. I recall there was one where FABC had procured content but was not able to flight it because of problems with scheduling, and that translates to food gas and wasteful expenditure. I recall at one time there was also questions around performance
management tied to the strategy. That in fact, the last, if I recall, the last statement from the auditor was, SABC only met 40% of its targets, and these were not properly articulated as SMART. There was poor monitoring, and it wasn't clear whether they were tied to the strategy.
Let's pause it.
Okay. Which one have I not covered?
The role of tertiary institutions.
Yes.
And that has been catered. I'm looking at your CV.
Yes.
As a person who is
yes.
The vice principal of operations and facilities at UNIS.
Yes. Actually, this is my favorite question. So, what UNIS does annually is we have public discussions, sometimes biannually. And many of the other institutions do the same. What has been worrying me on the side is this is free content for the national broadcaster. Shouldn't the national broadcaster be partnering with all the institutions when they have these public discussions? And most of the public discussions are in fact quite critical for the issues that on the day. You'll recall we once had a public discussion on hair and how hair is treated at school and what it means to for identity. Not so long ago, we had a discussion on bias towards my institution. My apologies in advance. But we talk about this, the Steve Biko. What did he mean? Who was Steve Biko? What did he stand for in our society? And so it would be in SABC's best interest to partner with institutions of higher learning bring this content. It's for free. They don't have to pay. Bring this content on and help us not so much enlighten but debate these national issues.
That's that answer. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me go by this first. Another book is on me.
Can I go?
Yes.
Thank you. Your CV says we must get references on request. Why? What's your idea?
No, I have nothing to hide. My previous boss, Eddie Carter, passed away, but and then my current boss would be my next reference. I'd have to ask him. At the university, my previous boss, Professor Hori, has retired, and that was in the Department of Communication Science.
So you were in ICASA when the mass care regulations were passed at the court.
Yes.
But those are ridiculous regulations. Am I correct? I mean, they bankrupted, or they robbed the SABC essentially. For many years, made it lose money. It seemed to me you were part of that decision.
I was on maternity leave. I'd actually just come back. So I was not part of the hearings. I was on maternity leave at the time. But what, let me put it this way. The argument at that time was how do we take public broadcasting content and make it available across the entire country while SABC's footprint is spread. So it was more on how do we make this public content available to the communities that cannot access SABC content. How the regulations were finally knitted. I had just come from the Tennessee, so the details there are not entirely.
This is a very fundamental question.
Yes.
Those regulations basically handed over audiences to multi-choices, not cost. Everyone else was being paid, except the SABC, on some false and degenerate understanding that there's some obligation for free to air on the part of the SABC. That was essentially a wrong, and it had no precedence anywhere in the world. I'm not sure if you're defending it now, or it was the wrong thing.
No.
So maybe what I'm trying to get is this rigorous objection to unfairness. Over all those years you were there, didn't seem to have been expressed on this unfair treatment of the SAGC. Am I correct?
I'll answer my question as follows. I have read the must carry provisions in law, and it is very clear that there had to be a transaction that benefits both parties. How it happened that it did not, I don't understand.
Okay, now you want to go to the SABC to see the problem that may have been created by this thing you don't understand. It's worrying for me. Let's move to the other subject. You would have been at the helm of an institution that should have made sure that data costs are not expensive for our people in general. Took you guys so long. In fact, in your entire tenure, it was almost no help, nothing coming from ICASA to drive down these oligarchies on costs that have no reasonability, again, by international standards. These are two important methods for transformation. I dare say for black people, access to information, for education, for all sorts of things. And your timing, Kasa, I don't get a sense that you had a dedicated rigor in that regard.
Perhaps let me make it clear that ICASA in fact had proceeded with those regulations after extensive market studies. The way the Act was crafted is such that it required ICASA to do extensive market studies. When ICASA had finally done so, certain advisors in the minister's office advised the minister to intervene. And the operators were very happy to rather work with the minister than to work with ICASA, because ICASA's figure was likely to be a whole lot lower than what the operators were going to agree with the minister. Nevertheless, as history has it, the operators happily and very quickly agreed with the minister's figures on the advice of the heat advisors at the time. It was the couple's huge disappointment. In fact, I remember the then chairperson, Paris Mashile, being very disappointed and saying publicly that the rate could have been 40 cents. You will also recall that at that same time when those regulations were formed and why the minister in fact intervened, MTN took ICASA to court. Just when we thought we were about to conclude our papers for that case, Vodacom then took ICASA to court. The judge then intervened and said that he will suspend ICASA's regulations for a further 6 months. We were all distraught. Given the amount of work investment we put into those regulations as members of council. So I will not say we took it lightly. You have to be in ICASA to understand the magnitude of the operator's ability to delay implementation of regulation. The latest one, I'm sure you are aware of, is how will they derail implementation of regulations. So I would not say we upset it, we were indifferent to the plight of transformation. In fact, I can tell you up front, sir, that at ICASA, the first thing I did was to change the licenses to meet the 30% threshold. All the licenses, it took us almost 2 years to reach that conclusion. The operators were very unhappy with the dispensation we wanted to set up. We actually started at 55%. We eventually compromised and reached a point of 30% and this was over a long time.
We didn't stop there. We then tried to level the playing field in the broadcasting sector by introducing more licensees. It is unfortunate that over time, South Africa has produced very strong oligopolies, very strong monopolies. And it is very sad for me, even when I sit here, that we have licensed many empowered licensees in a paid TV broadcast station, and none of them are around. Because of the extent of access and strength of financial muscle, multi-choice has over content. Locally and abroad.
That's fine. I don't have time, so let me do the last bit. Respectable and formidable people in the industry don't want this job of being a board member of the SABC. Some of the best names just left. We are struggling with the beast disease. We had a big fat chat with the former CEO just before yourself about the board of the SABC. People don't stay in it. And by people I mean formidable people. They resign. Often that accounts for something. Why do you think the board is always disintegrating in the SABC? I want to get your insight about whether you've looked into what exactly you're trying to get yourself involved in. But also, why do you think you will be able to finish a term?
Right. I'll start with the nature of the environment. I was in Ikasa. The level of interest and the number of and the extent of lobbying is really extensive. And I don't think SABC is any different. There are instances where the rules and the regulations will not cover everything unless ethics are in place. So, to summarize, one has to have a strong appreciation that firstly, when I did not conclude my term at ICASA, I was less than 1 month, and it was not because I was not able to withstand the interest, just because I had completed all my projects. At ICASA, at the beginning of every year, we all divide what everyone is meant to do as counselors, and when you've completed your project, I was less than 1 month. I just was not willing to sit and fiddle on my phone.
What do you think boards don't last in this issue?
I think it's the level of interest. If you're not able to hold your ground and persuade all the different parties, then some people give up.
Okay. Final one. You need to go on the record. No. Somebody accuses you.
No.
All right.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely, Chair. So these accusations about you being investigated for being a racist and trying to get rid of colored Indians in UNISA, you need to say something about that for the record, in as much as we're waiting for, is it an internal inquiry?
Yes, in fact it started with the Human Rights Commission and then it went to internal inquiry, yes.
Just unpack that. Is the Human Rights Commission having any conclusions about you? But you need to go. You need to tell us. Are you racist against Indians and colored?
Why would I be?
I don't know. I mean, it's not me making the claim.
The people are making the claim is 1,500 people that report to me. So I reject with contempt any view or allegation that one student presenting as racist simply because I have discovered irregular transactions.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Just a few questions from me. Because I was also,
I don't doubt your knowledge of the sector, and I'm sure I don't doubt also your understanding of the relationship between ICASA, the regulator, and SABC.
You have answered the question which I wanted to come there to. But you know, Dr. Marcia Sokri, you see us, not because of any vendetta or anything happening on this question, because when you are in the SABC, you want a candidate there fully qualified, and confident, strong, can be persuaded to do wrong things. That's what you want. We don't care wherever you come from. So, to me, I want us just to stretch a bit this place one thing. Because I want to be clear, as I said, I want to be clear, I was following Honorable Member Van Damme when I was questioning you. I want to be clear, you are saying there's nothing in the radio that you were not forced to actually, there's no law, act, or policy within the minister which compels you to actually advertise. That's one. Two, you are saying it's what could have been irregular is when the person in which we are talking about is actually seconded by his company or a company. So I want that to be clear on that, so that this thing must not prejudice you on whatever decision will be taken.
So just to come to the second question, if he was seconded, his independence would not be clear. So it's very important that link be, that umbilical cord be cut. He had worked by EY on the qualifications that we had in the print production unit. And that knowledge gave him particular insight. I in fact got, when I was employed at UNISA, EY had already been given the contract for over, I think, 3 or 4 years. So I found EY there, and I found Mr. Blayton in EY working auditing annually the print production section. So I think that's very important that I state that. The second part is that in view of our processes, I'm not aware that you have to advertise for a fixed term contract.
Then just lastly,
you'll see, I won't take even my first minute. You see, SABC has been bedeviled by exactly, you know why we are emphasizing this? You know why there's a problem of bloated staff personnel at SABC? It's exactly this thing of, if I'm in my position, I do as I want. I don't follow any human resource policies or what. You find that also in tenders in debt and how the finance is handled also. The very thing you are citing that we were cited by the Auditor General in the SA, which SABC even now, they have not been able to come out of that. We're not even sure in the coming financial year when the reporting happens on the general, they will be able to come out of that. So to me, what do you think should be done? Because all the boards have been grappling with it. What do you think should be done in making sure that the culture of flouting supply chain management rules or policies, culture of embezzling finances and flouting rent, rules there, and the culture of giving tenders to cronies and positions to to actually to friends and families. How do we get around that? What can be, just briefly, what do you think must be done to deal with that?
Firstly, you have to have a very strong governance framework in place. You have to have standard operating procedures in place that govern those transactions. And I will tell you, at UNISA, for any transaction, you have to declare whether you're conflicted or not. That is supply chain. There is no decision, transaction that comes to any of us without us declaring our interest in that matter. And you have to have a very strong internal audit unit that is fearless, willing to speak up at all times, both to the board and to management. If you have a weak internal audit unit or officials in place, your trouble starts there. So, and internal audits have to be so independent, so ethical, so flawless in its ability to do its work. It must not be obstructed in any way, otherwise the problem persists.
Oh. And your chair, lastly, I'm sure, as I see you sitting there, I'm sure you are not a racist. And this is actually, this goes right into the heart and core of our democracy, question of racism in this country. So I would advise you that once such allegations, whether flames, you know, people are, they like to, when they don't get their way or things, they want to throw these things to people, which are damaging the reputation of people. Please clear yourself on this.
Yeah.
Clear yourself so that you can continue with your life. Because if you don't do, in today's society in South Africa, it's going to follow you.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. Honorable Sunday.
Chair, I also have three questions. My first question, UNISA is a public institution. Are you saying that anyone can be picked from the street and given a contract? No advertising and no interviews. That's my first question. And then, accounting and all your answers is excuses and passing the buck. It seems as if you do not have responsibility and you don't hold your ground. And when I say this, I want to refer to the appointment of Blake Sun. You indicated it was yourself that made the appointment. And on the must carry regulations that Honourable Dorsey agreed, you first say you support, and then you say you were on leave. We really need people on the board, SABC board, with strong backbones and also with integrity. And I want to know if you think that you really qualify for that. And the last question that I have is, when can we expect the outcome of the internal investigation within UNISA? I think it's important, serious allegation, and we need to know the facts and the truth. We want to hear both sides of the story. Thank you.
I'd like to go to the question of integrity. When we confronted the Vodacom Telkom transaction, it worried me so much that I was willing to stand in front of a court of law to test the process that we have followed at ICASA. Let me put it on record. I was the only council member in that large courtroom with all the British
lawyers who were brought in from abroad.
Mm-hmm.
I was willing to defend what I think mattered. I was vilified in public for standing my ground. I was vindicated 5 years later, and silently I was happy that another highly qualified person in Telkom understood the predicament the country was in with that particular transaction. If that does not appear as integrity to you, I have nothing further to say. I have further been vilified for certain positions that I've taken as a woman. And I will put it on record. I continue, in many instances, continue to be challenged because I'm firm in what I believe in. If that must be presented as weakness, then let it be so. But I sleep well at night. And that is what I ask my team to do. In fact, the beginning of this year, I met with my team at UNISA. And we handle transactions worth millions. And I've asked each one of them to commit to being clean. My conversations are tough, but they're necessary. And if I would have it my way, I would subject all those who report to me to an ethical declaration once a year. In fact, other companies do it. I know they do it. And I would in fact invite everybody to do the same. Declare your ethical stand, score it, and look how to improve it year on year. On the issue of racism, I at UNISA started the Social, Economic and Human Rights Unit some time back when I was quite young. And I did that because it was painful to see how black academics were being treated. Most of them did not even stay at UNISA. It was very difficult. The fact that they have some of them and have blossomed is very encouraging. Mm-hmm. The fact that some white academics have stayed, who are also, I'd like to believe, quite conscious of the predicament of the racial impact in this country, is also encouraging. My master's thesis was on the impact of racism on the broadcasting and telecoms industry. It was painful to conclude that thesis. So that I should now be accused of being racist for me is quite surprising, but it's also opportunistic. But I'm not surprised, because when you ask tough questions, you are dealt with in this country. And I can tell you, the current production unit is not any different.
I've listened to your answers, and you came across as very honest, earnest, and not someone who
is represented in that letter. I know the difficulty we must face as a black woman, and in order to clear a name, we need that report. Do you know how far they are with it? Because if we have these allegations in front of us, you know, we need to deal with them, we can't ignore them. So that report is very important, because in terms of your CV, in terms of your qualifications, you qualify. It's just this one thing. So if you can ask the university to expedite it, or if they can give us an interim report or whatever that can be helpful, I think that would be great.
Thank you very much. Please, if you can note all the points that have been raised. Honorable, this time, we have Teddy and you. I know the Honorable does as well. I'll ask all of us now just to put questions. The next candidate is ready.
I didn't think this one, and I don't want you to respond to it now. It will be in your best interest, the suggestion that you are making, because there is only one session that the panel is taking from. You can just direct your session and the outcome of some of the investigations that might have been conducted at the level of the university around a whole range of other issues that have been raised now, and direct them to the office of the chairperson. We'll appreciate that. And if I think you can tell, it will be your best interest. Because put yourself in our position. There's only one question that we're facing.
I'm very impressed myself. You're proper.
Yeah.
That the thing of Blade Sun. And you must not assume the technical knowledge is understood. You should have said what is the fixed term contract. People to understand. And the agency of an internal audit. You break it down. Don't be shy to do that. Because at the conceptual level, the technology may not be accessible to a whole lot of people. I think that's why that question came. But something that I want you to clear. What is your relationship with Blade? So that you clear the controversy that you are appointing her son because he may have said something to you as a minister or maybe anywhere else. Because that's the link seemingly being created. Let's clear that so that you make my job easy. Thank you.
Before
we
respond, are you referring to the Honorable Minister's demand? Are you referring to the Honorable Minister's demand?
Oh, that one. You do not know who I'm referring to, Mama. You know who I'm referring to. The candidates understand.
Yeah.
Honorable Blade and the man.
The last question?
Yeah, no, Chair, that's Honorable Blade and the man. Chairman, despite these things, difficulties and so on, SABC has done good, man. Can you mention some of the good things SABC has done good? You know, I think it's important to get you and ourselves to understand that you really understand the institution. Thank you.
Honorable, I wanted to throw in something as well. I think members of the panel are really struggling with the notion that a highly qualified person can walk into the office and it's a contract, you don't know, or fixed contract for how long. So they're struggling with the procedure which could have been followed, whether it's a fixed contract or even a consultancy. So I think it is important to talk to them. Almost all organizations have procedures and policies that ought to be followed whether it's a short-term contract or whatever. So it keeps on, I don't want you to leave till that is clarified.
So let me put it on the record. Minister Blade was Minister of Higher Education not so long ago. The HRDC, where I was invited to present at the time the skills required in the telecom sector at that unit. If you recall, that unit reported to Minister Blade. Later when I went to UNISA, and I was not a permanent member, but I was an invitee. So whenever they required, whenever they had workshops, which I think was twice a year, the unit, the HRDC, wouldn't invite us so that we are aware of the skill set required either in the telecom sector when I went to UNISA, in the education sector. That's what the HRDC is. So it's a human capital, that is a human capital studies in the country. And that is it. So I have no, I don't know, perhaps ministers are looking for something tangible. That is how I relate to the minister. And then on the question of the FABC, the FABC has done well to the extent that it continues to produce local content that is world class. And I'm particularly happy that at the pace at which they moved to improve quality on the HD side, the high definition, so that this quality then becomes exportable. So FABC One has done well. FABC radios are doing very well. I mean, if you think of all our Nguni languages, they are excelling. I cannot think of how you can travel from north to south in this country in your car and not be thoroughly entertained by radio. I don't know if members, you know, in my travels elsewhere, I've never experienced this transition from one language to the other as you move from north to south. It's priceless. It's so enriching. It's a representation of our diversity. I can't think of anyone who does that for us. Multi-choice with the content that they have, I don't think they do that even from a content perspective. So we are blessed that we have local talent housed in FABC. And my prayer would be that we keep that talent and it flourishes and continues to produce the kind of standards that we saw over the awards over the weekend. It was heartwarming. It is encouraging. It is, and I have a firm belief, sorry to if I'm belaboring this, but I have a firm, very firm belief that the innovation sector is a critical part of our future. It is a critical part of our future as we move particularly to the LGBT environment. And furthermore, on the FABC, I think the question of the licensee, and I must just put this in, is going to be moot as we move to OTT. I'd like to put it on the table that my analysis is that the licensee hasn't worked. It will not work. Our ability to collect, you have to look at ESCOM, is challenging. We have to find another way that we fund this public interest. And the way that we can do, for me, from where I'm sitting, is that we must, France is doing it, and I know Europe is going to follow France, you must impose a digital tax that will cross-subsidize local content. If you don't do that,
I don't know where you're going to get the money, but you're not going to get it from licensees. So, you know, in the OTT space, where we are going at a very fast pace with our youth, this debate of licensees will become no more. And that way I would suggest that our intervention in the FABC must be future-proof. Where was I? Then on the question of the notion of a fixed-term contract. When I speak of fixed-term contract, it is how critical the need is, and it does follow certain processes. So it's not I take someone from the street, sign off, and give them a pay slip. No. Your CV is looked at, it is then matched to the current needs inside the department, and for a short time. And we consult with HR, HR give us a go ahead, depending on the seniority of the post. Some instances, depending on the it then goes to expo for approval. So it's not an automatic process. I just thought I should clear that to you. At that time, the print production unit had qualifications, I think, 3 or 4 years in a row, which could not be cleared, and they were compounding. I found them there. They were compounding. It was absolutely critical that we clear them very quickly, so that we can focus on producing study material for the students. Otherwise, it would have meant that we would not be able to account on expenditure properly in that unit and our controls on stock. Yes.
Maybe just on that point, I think that's what honorable members have been looking for, to say we put together a committee of X, they did 1, 2, 3, and they gave the outcome.
Yeah.
And that's what has been lacking. And that's why it kept on coming all the time. So, I don't know in this instance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm equally anxious about this report because I need to clear my name. And I would have, let me put it on record, preferred to have taken it to the labor court directly. But I have to, particularly if I've managed observe internal processes, that is what I'm doing. And I certainly would like to see it conclude in the labor court. Then I know that I've been vindicated.
Okay.
Thank you very much. I think we'll spend more time, but it was in the interest of the panel to clear quite a number of things. Is there anything which honorable family members didn't conduct with you, which once your name moves forward, somebody else might go into the form?
Not that I know of, Chair. I must just say that I didn't know this letter had arrived here. It was being said I had a right of reply in written form. My own legal team have drafted something that I've certainly given to the university. I'd be happy to also share that same letter with you in the interim, drafted by a known commissioner. Who also, in fact, happens to be white. So I'm going to put it on record so that it is, I don't want to say I'm hiding, but I think a right of reply in the version that the legal team has written, if you don't mind, I can send that to you immediately. I just need to consult with the legal team.
Okay.
Okay.
Well,
we'll
hear panel members will appreciate that. We thank you very much for your time. We'll be in touch as the process moves forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Me and you, you've been living for a long time.